translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Mukunda Dutt, a close friend of Lord Chaitanya's, was another branch of the Chaitanya tree. Lord Chaitanya danced while he sang. Sri Mukunda Dutta was born in the Chattagram district in the village of Janhora, which is under the jurisdiction of the police station named Patiya. This village is situated 10 kroshas or about 20 miles from the home of Pundrika Vidyanidhi. In the Gaura Ganodesha Deepika, text 140, it is said, Vrajestite Gayako Yo Madhukanta Madhuvratau Mukunda Vasudeva Tau Datto Gauranga Gayako. In Vraja, there were two very nice singers named Madhukant and Madhuvrata. They appeared in Chaitanya Leela as Mukunda and Vasudev Dutt, who were singers in the society of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. End of the verse. When Lord Chaitanya was a student, Mukunda Dutt was his class friend, and they frequently engaged in logical arguments. Sometimes, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would fight with Mukunda Dutt using tricks of logic. This is described in the Chaitanya Bhagavata, Adilila, chapter 7 and 8. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu returned from Gaya, Mukunda Dutt gave him pleasure by reciting verses from Srimad Bhagavatam about Krishna Leela. It was by his endeavor that Gadadhar Pandit Goswami became a disciple of Pundarika Vidyanidhi, as stated in Madhya Leela chapter 7. When Mukunda Dutta sang in the courtyard of Srivas Prabhu, Mahaprabhu danced with his singing, and when Lord Chaitanya for 21 hours exhibited an ecstatic manifestation known as Sata Prahariya, Mukunda Dutt inaugurated the function by singing sometimes. Sometimes Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chastised Mukunda Dutt by calling him Gari Jetiya Beta, because he attended many functions held by different classes of non-devotees. This is stated in Chaitanya Bhagavata, Madhya Leela, chapter 10. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dressed himself as the goddess of fortune to dance in the house of Chandrasekhar, Mukunda Dutt began the first song. Before disclosing his desire to take the renounced order of life, Lord Chaitanya first went to the house of Mukunda Dutt. But at that time, Mukunda Dutt requested Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to continue his Sankirtan movement for a few days more before taking sannyas. This is stated in Chaitanya Bhagavata, Madhya Leela, chapter 25. The information of Lord Chaitanya's accepting the renounced order was made known to Gadadhar Pandit, Chandrasekharacharya, and Mukunda Dutt by Nityananda Prabhu, and therefore all of them went to Katwa and arranged for kirtan and all the paraphernalia for Lord Chaitanya's acceptance of sannyas. After the Lord took sannyas, they all followed him, especially Sri Nityananda Prabhu, Gadadhar Prabhu, and Govinda, who followed him all the way to Purushottam Kshetra. In this connection, one may refer to Antilila, chapter 2. In the place known as Jaleshwara, Nityananda Prabhu broke the sannyas rod of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Mukunda Dutt was also present at that time. He went every year from Bengal to see Lord Chaitanya at Jagannath Puri. Om Jnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Mulitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchakal Patarubhyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivas Adi Ghora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jaya Shri Shri Radha Gokul Nananda Ki Jai Jai Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai. So welcome to every single one of you for this morning's class. So we're following on from the festivities of God Purnima by discussing this particular verse. I'll just read the translation again because I'm conscious that the purport was quite long and there was so much detail in the purport. So I'll just read the translation so we can put today's topic into perspective. Mukunda Dutt, a class friend of Lord Chaitanya, was another branch of the Chaitanya tree. Lord Chaitanya danced while he sang. So I was thinking that today, because the pastimes of Mukunda Dutt have been summarized by Srila Prabhupada in this purport, he uses a few of the primary examples of Mukunda Dutt's association with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, my thoughts were to spend today's class to talk about Mukunda Dutt. Is that okay, everybody? Yes? And I'm sure most of you know so much more about Mukunda Dutt. But what's very interesting is that whenever I've read about Mukunda Dutt, people like myself who are in a very unfortunate circumstance of not being around devotees for most of my days in the week, Mukunda Dutt, he gives a lot of reassurance. And the pastime which took place, so there's obviously many pastimes that took place, and there's reasons for that. So I'm going to attempt to try to describe some of those reasons. But the primary pastime that took place between Mukunda Dutt and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it is a very, very difficult topic for myself or anyone in my situation to try to describe. And in fact, Srinivas Thakur, who is called the leader or the keynote representative of the devotees when trying to speak or present ideas to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even Srinivas Thakur, when he was involved in the particular pastime, which we will cover in a few moments, even Srinivas Thakur said to Mahaprabhu, "I don't understand your leela with Mukunda Dutt." So if Srinivas Thakur had a difficulty in trying to understand the primary leela between these two personalities, I've got no hope. But nevertheless, I'm going to try to cover a few of those points. The word Shaka, just before I go into the attempt to go into the personality of Mukunda Dutt and describe some of his pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, just a very interesting point is the word Shaka. So Shaka we all know to be branches. And the example of a tree is being used by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in terms of maintaining the legacy of his movement. And a tree is given such great prominence in the story of Lord Jagannath. So I'm not going to divert the topic by describing that particular story. But during the time when Indradumna Maharaj spent so much energy and effort to finally arrive at the spot, where Nila Madhav is situated. Now obviously there's a huge story behind that as well, but I'm fast forwarding. When he finally arrived, then the local king, he came to Indradumna Maharaj to say that there was a sandstorm and the deity got buried under the sand and therefore that deity is no longer here. So the Maharaj Indradumna, he was accompanied by Narada. He asked Narada, because you hang around and you go everywhere and you know the route and the maps, you know, he's like a international, universal, Triloka Satnav. He knows exactly where to go. And Maharaj Indradumna, he had a hard time in trying to find Nila Madhav, which is why he sent the brother of his priest. Huh? And therefore, when Narad Muni accompanied Indradumna Maharaj, he submitted to Narad Muni that at least take me to the place where Nila Madhav is buried. And then when Indradumna Maharaj arrived at that place, he started to weep and he started to touch and offer his obeisances on the ground under which so many miles was the deity of Nila Madhav to this very day. And then Narad Muni explained that actually on this very spot, the temple of Jagannath will appear. Now, while he was describing this, then obviously there was many activities he had to do. For example, he performed a number of Ashwamedh Yagyas. I think there was 1,000 Ashwamedh Yagyas he was required to perform in order to prepare for the advent of Lord Jagannath and obviously Lord Brahma and the celestials to perform the Prana Pratishtha. But then there was an interesting point that something very unique was described to Indradumna Maharaj, which is something which is only explained once in the Rig Veda. Only one verse. And therefore, because there's 432,000 verses in the Rig Veda, there's one verse that describes this particular point. And that is that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he can appear in a daru, or a would. And this is such a interesting and a very, very difficult concept to understand when this particular principle is not there in practice. And in describing this particular point, Narad Muni, he explained to Indradyumna that when Lord Vishnu shakes his body, the hairs from his body descend in the material world and they manifest as trees. You see? So the various trees are considered to be representations of Lord Vishnu. And from one particular tree would the deity of Lord Jagannath be carved. And therefore Narad Muni, he was trying to explain the importance of how a deity can manifest in a Daru Brahman, in a tree. So trees are being used to describe the strength, the stability, the sthirata of the legacy of Sampradaya. And therefore, in this particular chapter, Kaviraj Goswami, he's using the example of a tree, which is very divine. It's very significant in our Vedic culture. It's very special, it's potent, it's spiritual. And using that example, he's then describing how Mahaprabhu's legacy is was established and how it went through so many. He used the example of branches, and branches are shaka. So I just wanted to step back one moment to describe, why is a tree being used? Why not clouds or particles of the sun? But a tree is very, very special. And we all know that even in Gita Sar, Kurukshetra, when Lord Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita, he took the chariot underneath the banyan tree. And when he was speaking Bhagavad Gita, he was speaking this underneath the banyan tree. And he used the banyan tree, the very same banyan tree that Krishna was speaking Bhagavad Gita underneath. He looked up and he used that as an example in 15th chapter. Urdhvam Mulam Adha Shakam. So the word shaka is there again used. So I just wanted to spend a few moments just explaining why I believe trees and shakas are being described to expand the legacy and the parampara of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Mukunda Dutt, as you know, is the older brother of Vasudev Dutt. So two very, very special brothers. And Prabhupada explains that these two brothers, Mukunda and Vasudev, they have a very, very particular service, an eternal association with Lord Krishna in Vrindavan. So in the Nectar of Devotion, chapter 36, Transcendental Affection, the followers of the Lord are described. And Prabhupada explains that there are some individuals who are constantly engaged in the personal service of the Lord. And they're called anugas, yeah, or followers. And amongst these followers, there are some anugas in Dwarika, and there are some anugas in Vraja, or Vrindavan. And Prabhupada, he then lists the anugas in Vrindavan. He says, for example, Raktaka, Patraka, Patre, Madhukant, and Madhuvrata. So Madhukant and Madhuvrata manifested in Chaitanya Leela as Mukunda and Vasudev Dutt. These anugas, in their service to Krishna in Vrindavan, they're the ones who carry Krishna's venu, the flutes, the mullis, the buffalo horns, the stick, the rope, and other paraphernalia. So this is really the background of Mukunda and Vasudev Dutt. Now, Mukunda and Vasudev Dutt, Prabhupada explains, they came from a village called Chattagram. And at the particular point when Navadvip was known as the place of education and enlightenment, many, many Vaishnavas from Chattagram, they migrated to live on the banks of the Ganga. And they did that so that their children can study in Navadvip Dham. And amongst those were also Vasudev and Mukunda Dutt. Now, all of these devotees, headed by Mukunda and Vasudev, they were all considered to be renounced devotees of Krishna. And they had all taken birth in Chattagram by the order of Krishna. So we can understand from the outset that Mukunda Dutt was already a very, very elevated soul. And in fact, the biographies of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, sometimes they call him Mahanta. And Mahanta, as you know, is used sometimes, for example, to be the leader of a group of devotees, Mahanta, the chief. And sometimes, so we have the word Uttamadhikari and Mahabhagwat. So Vasudev, Mukunda Dutt, he's also called Paramabhagwat. Paramabhagwat. So Mukunda Dutt was an extremely elevated, confidential, eternal servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And after school hours had finished, so they also had hours when they would finish school as well during those days. And Mukunda, Vasudev, and the devotees of Chattagram, they would all assemble at the house of Advaita in the evenings after school, in late afternoons. And during those evenings, they would all discuss Krishna Katha. Now, Mukund, he had such a special ability. He was empowered by Lord Krishna to sing in such a way that even stones around the house of Advaita Acharya would melt. And whoever heard the singing of Kirtan by Mukunda, they would sometimes cry, laugh, all excited symptoms would manifest immediately. Sometimes even they would lose their clothes in ecstatic prem. So Mukunda had that ability. You know, he was so empowered by Lord Krishna. And in fact, later on at the end of the primary Leela, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually describes that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he appears in the throat of Mukunda. He appears in every word of Mukunda. And therefore you can understand how Mukunda is so specially empowered by Gaura Sundara. Now Chaitanya at that time, as you know, was during the age when he was called Nimai. So Nimai, during those days, he would tease the Vaishnavas. Okay, he would tease the Vaishnavas. And because Mukunda was always at the forefront, leading Kirtan, fortunately for Mukunda, he was always the object of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's harassment. He would get harassed. There was no escape by Mukunda. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, internally, he was so satisfied with him. Because when Mukunda would sing, the devotees would feel the presence of Krishna. And therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whenever he would see Mukunda, he would stop him so he can tease and have, as they use the word, parihas, or jokes with him. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whenever he would stop Mukunda, he would ask him a particular point. And he would ask him, can you please clarify? Now, Mukunda, he would attempt to clarify, and whatever Mukunda said, Chaitanya would say, you're wrong. And he would defeat him. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was the one, he would begin arguments. He was very argumentative with the devotees, and especially Mukunda. Now, by Krishna's mercy, Mukunda, he was actually very learned. He was very, very learned. And therefore, Mukunda, he was one person who had the ability to counter-argue with Nimai. That was a very difficult task to do, considering who Nimai was at that time in Navadvip. And even though Mukunda would counter-argue with Nimai, in the end, he would always get defeated by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, when Srinivas Thakur and his associates would see Nimai even coming from a distance, they would just run away. They did not want, their mentality was, I don't want to even waste my time arguing with Nimai. It's just useless. Because whatever we say, he says you're wrong. And then he starts arguing. And then you have a difficulty to even try to reestablish the original point. So this is just a waste of our time. One particular time, Mukunda, he was on his way to have a bath in the Ganga. And from a distance, he saw Nimai. Now, Mukunda, he was in a situation where he required to have a bath immediately. And Mahaprabhu was walking this way, and as soon as Mukunda saw him, he ran the other way. And he said, forget about my bath of purification. I just didn't even want to be around Nimai. Now, at that time, Nimai got disturbed. And he said to one of his students, Govinda, why is Mukunda running away from me? You know, he had his gamcha, his lota. Clearly he's coming to this way. Behind me is the Ganga. He's coming to have a bath. And he saw me from a distance and he ran away. What is so bad about me? Then Govinda, being a very, very good, clever student, he said, maybe he had some other business to do. You know, so we had no mobile phones or emails to answer. But despite that, Govinda said, maybe he had some other business to do. Now Mahaprabhu said, no, actually that's not true. That's not true. I know why Mukunda ran away. He said, because Mukunda, number one, does not like to speak with non-devotees. Now these points, I feel, are very important to just establish in one's mind. Because these points will then make things clear later on when we come to the very, very difficult pastime between Mahaprabhu and Mukunda. So Mahaprabhu said to Govinda, at that time, he said, number one, Mukunda does not like to speak with non-devotees. Okay? And number two, he always studies Vaishnava literature. Whereas me, I'm not a devotee of Krishna. And opposite, I study things like Panji, Vritti and Tika. Now Panji, Tika, these are all books on grammar. Okay, so they're not really much use to us to know anything more than that. These are all just books on Sanskrit grammar. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he had already known this fact about Mukunda. No devotee association and no studying of non-Vaishnava literature. So this is a very important point for me to clarify to even myself, because later on, this helps myself to understand the context of this very, very difficult pastime between the two a bit later. And therefore, Mukunda does not speak to me, because I don't speak anything about Lord Krishna. And then Vrindavan Das Thakur, he used the word Gali. So those who understand Hindi and Bengali, the word Gali, okay, it can have a very, very crude meaning. But we'll just say that the word Gali means ill names. Okay, so Mahaprabhu would then call Mukunda ill names. Gali, you know, Gali Bolta. Right, so that's, you know, it's not really a nice thing to do, is it? But that was the sweetness between both of these. Now remember that they was class friends. And therefore Mahaprabhu, he would treat him like very intimately. And therefore he would mockerize and tease Mukunda as much as possible. But then Mahaprabhu, he made this statement. This is the first statement he made. He said to Govinda, and he said this loud enough for Mukunda to hear. He said, would you like to repeat with me? Everybody just join in with me. He said, my dear boy Mukunda, how long will you avoid my clutches? Do you think you will escape my association by running away? After finishing my studies, you will all see my Vaishnav qualities. Even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva will come to my door. Can you imagine what Mukunda was thinking? You know? That now he's really teasing me, huh? Now he's really trying to mockerize me being a Vaishnava and him considering that Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma would even come to visit him. Now, Mukunda, he also was instrumental to perform a beautiful pastime with Ishwarapuri. So you would know that there was a time where Ishwarapuri, he desired to come and have darshan of his godbrother. He was Advaita Acharya. Because they were both initiated by Madhvendra Puri, correct? Yeah? So Ishwarapuri, he was such a humble person that he wanted to come disguised. So Ishwarapuri, he disguised himself and he entered into the house of Advaita. Now Advaita Acharya and the devotees, they were serving Ishwarapuri along with the other Bhaktaganas, along with the other assembled devotees. Now when Advaita Acharya was serving Ishwarapuri, there was one thing that he was not able to understand. Why is this particular soul who has chadar and everything else covered around him, looking like, you know, he's disguising himself, why is Ishwarapuri so effulgent that he's illuminating the entire house? You know, we have a shadow. His shadow is not even dark. He has an illuminated, beautiful golden hue. He's so effulgent. So Advaita said to this particular person, you must be a sannyasi. You must be a sannyasi. Who are you? You know? And Ishwarapuri, he would say, I'm just a fallen soul, you know, just from a low family. I've just come to seek the association and being around devotees. You know, he's keeping his head down, covered in his disguise. And then Advaita started to argue pleasantly with Ishwarapuri, trying to understand, who is this person? So why are you so evil? Then the other devotees joined in. No, this must be some celestial, some demigod, some really empowered special soul. Because he's so effulgent, as if the suns are manifesting through his body. And then Mukunda, when he saw this conflict between the devotees, headed by Advaita and Ishwarapuri, Mukunda, he started to sing kirtan. And as he started to sing kirtan, at that point, his chadar, his hat, his disguise just flew off the body of Ishwarapuri. And then Ishwarapuri, he incessantly, his eyes swelled up, and his eyes were just
flowing like an ocean. His tears had drenched his body and he fell onto the floor. And everyone said, Ishvara Puri. This is Ishvara Puri. So Mukunda, through his kirtan, he was even able to reveal Ishvara Puri. And what's interesting is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is similarly a Channa avatar, a covered incarnation of Lord Krishna, Mukunda was able to uncover him. So he uncovered Ishvara Puri, his guru, and he covered his disciple, Chaitanya. So this is the greatness of Mukunda and his leading of kirtan. So once there was a particular incident, in fact there's two incidents. One took place in Mukunda and one took place with Gadadhar Prabhu, Pandit. And these two incidences resulted in the devotees begging Krishna to make Nimai into a devotee. And what's interesting is that Srila Prabhupada, he mentions that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one of the reasons why he became a grammarian, and he didn't enter directly into, he didn't manifest his Krishna Bhav until the devotees didn't pray for him. Jaya Shri Shri Radha Gokulanda Bhagavan ki jai. Jaya Shri Dalakshma Hanuman ki jai. Shri Gaurinithai ki jai. And therefore, only when the devotees prayed and begged Krishna for Chaitanya to become a devotee, did he become a devotee. So it's a very interesting example that Mahaprabhu is describing through Gadadhar Pandit and the devotees, that to attain Krishna, one requires the blessings and the prayers of the devotees. So Mahaprabhu is setting all these examples. So once, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it is said that in a very royal disposition, you know, royal attitude, you know, I don't know exactly what that means, but maybe Mahaprabhu was, you know, walking like this, head up, and with his students, and he had his books in his hand. And Mahaprabhu was walking on a street. And Mukunda, he was absorbed in Krishna. So what happened was Mukunda didn't see Mahaprabhu coming. Otherwise, he would have ran away. So while absorbed in Krishna, he came very close to Lord Chaitanya. Very, very close. Close enough for Mahaprabhu to grab his hand. And he said, now where are you going to run? How are you going to run from me? And Mukunda was thinking, now Mahaprabhu, as you know, he was very, very strong. It's impossible. When Mahaprabhu fell in ecstatic prayer, sometimes his body would become so heavy that nobody could move him, like onto a bed or a place so that he can rest his body. And sometimes he becomes so light that the devotees will carry him after Mahaprabhu fell in trance. So Mahaprabhu was a very strong person. And Mukunda had no, he couldn't run away. He had no escape. Mahaprabhu was holding his hand. And he looked up, oh no, Mahaprabhu was standing there, the very person who all the devotees ran away from. And then Mahaprabhu said that, you know, now, today, you're going to have to debate with me and answer me. Now Mukunda felt, you know what, I'm not going to run away. This is the one time where I'm not going to run away. I'm not going to try to escape from his hands. He probably felt, you know, the beauty of Mahaprabhu's hands. You know, and was inclined to keep holding on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's hands. So Mukunda thought, you know what, today I'm going to defeat Nimai's pride. He's so proud of his grammar. I'm going to defeat him. Now, I won't get into this too much, purely because of my own limitations in understanding this particular point. But Mukunda, because he was an expert singer, and he was also very learned, because he was empowered by Lord Krishna, Mukunda had mastered a particular text called the Alankar Shastras. Now, I'm not going to bore you with this, okay? And it's not going to do anything for anyone's attachment to Krishna. But I'll just use one or two sentences just to very, very, very quickly describe Alankar Shastra. So Alankar Shastra are basically a book of treatises that speak about metaphors, similes, and they're mainly used to try to enhance drama. So we, for example, saw the Bhaktivedanta Mana players, yeah? So they obviously do dramas based upon scriptural texts. But then what happens is, in order to dramatize some of that, you have to add in some emotion. And therefore, sometimes, unlike the plays over here, sometimes other plays are not always so, they don't marry so well with the scripture, because they have to dramatize it, you see? So in order to try, now the devotees don't have that problem over here, but the non-devotees, what they do is to try to make the source story Anadwama as close as possible, they study the Alankar Shastras. And the Alankar Shastras, they try to describe on how to put the emotion in the right way without losing the essence of the story. Okay, so that's it. I'm not going to speak more about the Alankar Shastra. Now, Mukunda Dutt, he was an expert in the Alankar Shastra. So Mukunda Dutt, he felt that today I'm going to debate Nimai on Alankar, not on grammar. And you know what he said to Nimai? He said, Nimai, grammar is for children. Vyakaran is for children. Which is actually why, in my own limited experience, my own very, very, very limited experience, many years ago, I feel like I'm very old, many years ago, when I was studying Sanskrit, and, you normally have to go, this is now my own experience, okay? I'm not trying to generalize in this, so please don't misunderstand me. So when I was myself embarking on studying Sanskrit and grammar, you know, the one thing that I realized was a lot of unfortunate people that I came across that were so proud, you know, because Sanskrit is something that, because it's the words of God, the people who I knew, they were so proud. They felt like, you know, they're so powerful because now they're able to crunch and decipher and give inner explanations of Vyasa's Vedas. And they try to, you know, sometimes you get lost because of the grammar and the use of Sanskrit. So I was thinking, you know, how am I going to maintain my Krishna consciousness by learning Sanskrit? It's going to be a clash for my own, in my own life. Because I could see that the people who I was learning Sanskrit from, you end up becoming quite proud, you know? It's actually very obvious, you know, the way you come across and the way your command of Sanskrit is. So I was speaking to one of my Siksha gurus, Bhakti Chaturaswami. And this is a very, very, very long time ago. And Bhakti Chaturaswami, he actually said the same thing to me. He said, forget about London, the same thing is in India. You know, even he wanted to learn Sanskrit and he had the similar experiences. That, you know, the teachers, they're so proud and they think that they're really powerful and that they can now reinterpret Krishna. And then they actually start to try to explain on how Krishna's internal thoughts are by using some of his words. You know, it's such a powerful thing in the wrong hands. So Bhaktisaraswami said to me that that Srila Prabhupada, he wrote his purports in such a way that one doesn't actually need to go to learn Sanskrit from grammarians. Bhaktisaraswami said to me that if you just read Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, just by reading the word for words, you will learn enough Sanskrit to help you in your Krishna consciousness and not turn you the other way, which generally happens. So I said, Bhaktisaraswami said to me that actually that's how he learned his Sanskrit. He learned his Sanskrit by reading Prabhupada's books. You know? And then there came a point where I actually felt that very, very similar thing. That whatever Sanskrit I needed to learn in order to help my very, very minimal understanding without, you know, going to the other way and becoming very, very proud and everything else. And I felt that actually, yeah, by reading Srila Prabhupada's books, that's actually enough that you need to know so that you can keep your Krishna consciousness focused, which is to attain love of Krishna and to try to follow the rules and regulations and not really try to become a grammarian. So anyway, in my own little experience of life, I felt that these words of my Siksha Guru proved so clear to me. And therefore, it's interesting because the Sanskrit that is learned by reading Prabhupada's books keeps you a devotee. It keeps you a devotee. So please don't think I'm criticizing grammarians. I'm just telling you my own experience in my own life. And it's actually quite a common thing, if you notice. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada's books, they also teach you whatever you really need to know, without really going outside and endeavoring so much to become an expert in something which is directly, not always necessarily, Krishna conscious. So the Alankar Shastra, Mukunda decided I would debate Mahaprabhu on Alankar Shastra. So then what happened was Mukunda, he started to now give verses and recite verses which are very difficult but also quite well known to people. And then when Nimai heard these verses from Mukunda of the Alankar Shastra, Mukunda asked Nimai, can you find some faults in these particular verses? Because you know what? They're faultless. These are faultless verses. Some of the great scholars of the Alankar Shastra were, for example, Bahama, Vamana, and Rudrata. And these three personalities, they spent so much energy in writing these Alankar Shastras around about the 8th century AD. Around about the 8th century AD. So Mukunda knew that Mahaprabhu was not going to be able to find any faults in the Alankar Shastra. And what did Mahaprabhu do? He found faults. And Mahaprabhu began to show the weaknesses of these three personalities, names who I just quoted, the Acharyas of the Alankar Shastra, a book that Mahaprabhu never touched, a book that Mahaprabhu never ever read, something that Mahaprabhu was not into. Mahaprabhu wasn't into singing and drama and poetry and songs. He was like a staunch grammarian, you know. No, this is how you speak properly. This is exactly what verb goes here. You want to say I'm standing, you just said that wrong. You can't even say hello, you're saying that wrong too. You know, you know, the first accent is too low. Increase the accent on the first syllable. And when you come to the end of the word hello, that's when you should decrease the accent. You know, you're such a fool. You can't even say hello in the morning. And you say the word Krishna, you can't even say the word Krishna properly. You know, this is some of the grammarian experiences that I've had in my little life. Anyway, so Mahaprabhu, you know, he was finding fault this way. Now, Mukunda was thinking that, you know, I can't even argue with this Nimai. I'm an expert in Alankara Shastra. And I can't even argue with him. And Mahaprabhu actually thought that, you know what, Mukunda, I think you should just go home, go to sleep, get a good night's rest, wake up in the morning, read your books, and come back in the morning. And we'll have another debate. So this was Nimai's response. Go home, you know, you've had enough. Go and do your reading, come back. And then we'll debate again. Now, Mukunda, he was just bewildered. And in that bewildered state, Mukunda, he put his... So the person that used to run away, okay? His legs that would run away, take him far from Nimai. Mukunda was thinking that, you see this person, he is something very special. Whatever book you speak about, whatever subject you speak about, he knows it so much that it's as if he wrote those books. Because only the writer would know the thoughts. Okay? Okay, and sometimes the writer may not know his limitations, but then people that are greater would know. And this Nimai, whatever you talk to him about, he knows everything. He knows everything. So he was thinking, you know, Vedanta Krit Vedavidevacham. Only Krishna that says these words in 15:15 Bhagavad Gita, only someone like that can speak in this way. So Mukunda was thinking, this person is such a great soul. So those feet that would lead Mukunda far away came closer to Nimai. And Mukunda, he bowed down his head at the feet of Nimai. He took the dust from his feet and he rubbed it on his head. And this was the first time Mukunda was thinking, this is obviously never going to happen in my life. But this is actually what drew Mukunda close to Mahaprabhu, this situation that Mukunda had the revelation that actually Mahaprabhu is something very special. And he knows everything. He actually knows everything. And when Mahaprabhu was walking away, he was thinking, you know what? If somebody like this became a devotee of Krishna, it will be extraordinary. The Vaishnav Samaj, who are teased by the Shaivites and by the Shaktas, who are oppressed by the, as Kripamaya Prabhu kindly used the words a few days ago, the Sharia law, the Islamic State. Oh, sorry, I shouldn't say that one, should I? So sorry, beep. the Islamic monarchy. Monarchy. He was thinking, you know, if somebody like this become a devotee, it'll be so useful for Abhi. We'll have strength, we'll have words, we'll have a background, we'll have an establishment, we'll have credibility. So Mukunda was thinking like this. Now, I'm not going to go into this pastime very quickly. Deeply, I'll just very quickly cover. A similar thing happened with Gadadhar Prabhu, with Gadadhar Pandit. And in that situation, it got very, very heated. The debate got very heated. And after this, Gadadhar Prabhu, he led prayers with the Vaishnavas that let's pray for Nimai. Let's all pray, let's beg Krishna that Nimai becomes a devotee of Lord Krishna. And you all know, and now again, I don't want to divert, because Chaitanya Charitamrita is so beautiful that it's so easy to divert and enter into different pastimes. But you know, after Advaita Acharya's house, Ishwara Puri, he met Nimai on the road. You know this? He met Nimai on the streets. And Nimai begged him to come home. And then you remember that this was the first time that Nimai and Ishwara Puri met at his very home. Yeah? And Ishwara Puri had composed the book. And he asked Nimai, "You're a great grammarian. Can you please correct some of my mistakes?" Nimai said, "No way. You know, whatever." And Nimai, you know, he actually said this, despite being a grammarian. Because it's very difficult for Nimai to keep Krishna out of his life, despite him doing this temporarily, to infuse and increase the attachment of the devotees to Nimai. But somehow Nimai, he actually used the words. He said to Ishwara Puri that, "Ishwara Puri, whatever you say is written by Krishna. Therefore, even me being a grammarian, how can I find fault in your words?" But Ishwara Puri said, no, you please, you know, you're an expert in this. I'm not an expert grammarian. Please find some mistakes so I can correct my book and publish it. So then Nimai, as you all know, he found a few faults. And Ishwara Puri, it was just, it's just that there's three groups of verbs. Atmanepad, Parasmepad, and Upayapad. It's just three, I'm not going to go, it's just three groups of verbs. And then Mahaprabhu said, Nimai said to Ishwara Puri, "You know, you've used the wrong group of verbs." And Ishwara Puri was thinking, maybe not. And then Ishwara Puri, you know, he obviously held Nimai in such high regards. So he really took it to heart. But then Ishwara Puri was thinking, this is the same Nimai that when he defeats somebody, they run away. They lose. Now this Nimai is finding faults in my book because I've asked him to. So therefore, whatever he says should be true. But Ishwara Puri, he sat and he thought very contemplated. And what did he say? "You're wrong." For the first time, somebody said to Nimai, "You're wrong." Nimai would say to everybody, "You're wrong." Now for the first time, Ishwara Puri said, "You're wrong. You're incorrect. The faults that you have found in my book are not correct." And Nimai said, "You defeated me." So the first person to defeat Nimai was Ishwara Puri ke dhanya. Laila shijay dhanya with Ishwara Puri. First person to defeat Nimai. The same time when he was in the pastime of saying to everybody, "You're wrong," and he would defeat everybody. So these are some aspects. Now, to fast forward very, very quickly. All of you know that Nimai came back from Gaya, initiated into the holy name. Nimai, he showed by example how the devotees and the spiritual master are actually the medium to becoming Krishna conscious. And despite Mahaprabhu being Krishna himself, he chose to enter Krishna consciousness through the spiritual master and the devotees. So that's my own understanding. I might not be completely correct, okay? But that's my own understanding from reading Kaviraj Goswami's Chaitanya Charitamrita. That this is actually the background as to why Nimai was so averse to Krishna consciousness previously. Now, Mukunda, as you all know, that Mukunda was a personality who, after initiation, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in order to orchestrate and develop and lead on Mahaprabhu's ecstatic love for Krishna, Mukunda would sing. Mukunda would recite verses from the Bhagavatam. Now just think for one moment that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is thinking about Krishna so much, okay, he's completely absorbed in Lord Krishna. And then Mukunda, he would help Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his absorption of Krishna by reciting verses from the Bhagavatam that describes Krishna's color, his beauty, his ornaments, his clothing. And in this way, when Mukunda would begin to recite these verses, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would then fall into ecstatic love. And that's when he would lose himself. And the eight symptoms would manifest. And this happened regularly. Whenever Mukunda felt that Mahaprabhu is now moving away from talking and interacting to now contemplating and absorbing his love in separation from Lord Krishna, Mukunda, his service was to lead Mahaprabhu in that way. And therefore he would start to sing. And he would start to recite verses. And this happened regularly. That was his service. Can you imagine? His service was like that. And the stones around him would melt. It was Mukunda that when he would see the fan being used on the king, the Islamic kings, Mukunda, who was situated on a top platform, he would just drop from the platform onto the floor and crash land. Yeah? Whenever he would see the fan being used, peacock fan being used, reminded him of Krishna. Mukunda was also the person who led to Gadadhar Pandit take initiation as well, from Pundarika Vidyanidhi. So Mukunda, he was instrumental. He used his kirtan in such a way that the devotees, headed by Srivas Thakur, they became attached to Krishna and Chaitanya through Mukunda's kirtan. So can you imagine, this person's kirtan? Can you imagine his level of empowerment, that even God himself would utilize Mukunda to orchestrate and lead him on his absorption of Krishna? So this is Mukunda. Now obviously you would all know so much more about Mukunda, but there's this particular pastime that took place. The Maha Prakash Varnana. The pastime where Mahaprabhu manifests his Mahaprakash Leela. Now, during that particular pastime, if we just understand for one moment that Mukunda, he was the lead of the devotees. He would lead kirtan. And in leading kirtan, he would bring everybody close to Krishna. Even Mahaprabhu himself. Now, this very same Mukunda, because he was such a confidential and intimate associate of Gauranga Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he used Mukunda in a very, very difficult pastime to express a very important point. A very important point. And this important point is not even understood by Srivas Thakur. Therefore, I'm going to have absolutely great difficulty to describe it. But I'm just going to repeat like a parrot, okay? And you could all correct me after. We'll always have time for that after the class. But what would happen is, Mahaprabhu, he decided to use Mukunda, who was such a notable kirtan leader, as an instrument to describe devotee's attachment, the faith of a devotee in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and a word that is used regularly by our leaders in our society, perseverance. 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 So these are some of the things that Mahaprabhu wanted to establish through Mukunda. So, as you all know, that during the Mahaprakash Leela, Mukunda was there, Murari was there, Murari Gupta, so was Advaitacharya, and correct me, who else? Haridas Thakur, and other devotees were all there. So, Mahaprabhu, there was a time where he became so much absorbed and so merciful in his a manifestation of Krishna that he wanted to give devotees lots of blessings. So he started to call devotees forward. Okay, so he called Sridhar. Because then the story of Sridhar is described. So he called Sridhar, he called Murari, he called Haridas Thakur, and he started to reveal the past of these devotees. And Mahaprabhu, he started to describe to these devotees how he's always been with them. So just one example, he said to Haridas Thakur that when you're being whipped 21 times, and Mahaprabhu, he described this on God Purnima, that when you're being whipped 21 times, Mahaprabhu said, I manifested myself and I covered your back. So Mahaprabhu embraced Haridas Thakur from behind and he covered Haridas Thakur's back. And Mahaprabhu was getting whipped, not Haridas Thakur. Although Haridas Thakur was obviously feeling the pain, I mean, well, from the worldly perspective, who am I to describe and even attempt what Haridas Thakur was feeling? But from the worldly perspective, there were lashes being hit. And in an apartyaksh, in an invisible form, Mahaprabhu said to Haridas Thakur that I was on your back. And I'll show you. And he lifted his clothes. Sorry, his chadar. They didn't have shirts and things like that during those times. Sorry. Jumpers. And he showed the whiplashes on his back. Haridas Thakur was thinking, wow. You know? And then he described other situations with the other personalities. He started to reveal all of the past of these people and how Mahaprabhu was always with them because he was in that bhav of being Krishna. And then after that, he asked the devotees to come forward and ask for blessings. Some devotees said, you know, can I please remain in your service life after life? Some other devotees were saying, you know, can you please bless my mother-in-law, my father-in-law? You know, maybe they needed it, you know. I wish I could say that, right? And I hope my wife's not listening to this class. Anyway, and then, when do I go home? And then they were asking, can you please bless my children? Can you please bless my wife, my family, my community? So many devotees were coming one by one to Chaitanya, asking for blessings. Now, Srivas Thakur, he noticed that there is one person who is not being asked to come forward. Mukunda. Now, some say Mukunda was sitting. Mukunda was outside and he was sitting behind a curtain. Okay? And behind the curtain, Mukunda was just absorbed in relishing the pastime between Mahaprabhu and the various devotees. But Mukunda, in his heart, he felt that there's a bit of tension between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Mukunda. Now, obviously, poor Mukunda, he had experiences, a lot of experiences of tension between Mahaprabhu and himself as class friends. So when you have an experience with a friend, an associate of a devotee in the past, and if it becomes really, really sweet, and suddenly, you know, things are not so clean, you know, there's a little bit of detachment, a little bit of awkwardness, and then, you know, your mind will obviously flow back to the times when the grass wasn't so green, yeah? Because you had that experience with that person. So Mukunda was thinking that, you know, maybe he's going to begin, you know, the whole thing again with me. You know, you're wrong, teasing me, things like that. So Mukunda thought, you know what, it's just best to just stay away. So that's why he hid behind the curtain. That was his beauty. And Mukunda also felt, actually, you know, Mahaprabhu, that just by doing kirtan and just by chanting, I'm trying to say this properly, okay? Hopefully I don't get thrown off the Vyasasana at this point. But Mukunda was thinking that just by doing kirtan and by chanting, it doesn't mean that I can force Krishna to give me darshan. Yeah? We do this so that we can beg Krishna for darshan. But we can't force Krishna. When Krishna is satisfied, he will give us darshan. But we don't let go of the holy name. We don't let go of chanting. So in my own life, while I'm chanting and I don't feel the presence of Krishna, you know, I shouldn't personally feel that, why is it Krishna giving me darshan? Why isn't he interacting in my life in a more visible, more apparent way? Because my mentality or thinking like that is wrong, isn't it? I should think that, no, when Krishna is ready to reveal himself in through his devotees, through his deity, through book distribution, through Prabhupada, through so many things, maybe it's just a matter of me finding Krishna through these various, the dhyanam, huh? Through these various ways. Why should I feel that Krishna is my servant just because I'm chanting his holy names? So Mukunda, therefore, he sat behind the curtain. Can you see? Can you see? Such a beautiful personality. So great. Sometimes the most humble and the most quiet ones get told off. But this is exactly what's going to happen. This is exactly what's going to happen. Because Mahaprabhu knew that these humble and quiet devotees, they're actually the ones who have strength and character. Sometimes the very, very loud, you know, ones, they may have a weak character, you know. Now, I'm not speaking about devotees here, but at all, okay? But in my own unfortunate life, outside of my very, very minimal association with the temple, that's very much the case. You know, working in a building with 11,000 people. And, you know, you find that some of the very, very more mature people who I work with, those who are not wanting to flaunt their income, their money, their opulences, their wisdom, they tend to actually have a humble disposition. And those who are actually, you know, pretending that they're something that they're not, they tend to have a very arrogant disposition and they're very, very loud. And it's their characters that are actually very, very weak. So that's my own understanding in my own life outside of the temple, in the world out there where I do work. So it's a very obvious thing. And you know, there's this beautiful verse. And I always wonder, actually, that this verse, it's such, it teaches me so much. It says, Vidya dadati vinayam. That actually knowledge is meant to make you humble. Isn't it? Vidya dadati vinayam. When you find out about Krishna and his greatness, and the greatness of people who are attached to Krishna, his devotees, those who have devoted their life to Krishna. Sometimes it's such an important thing to think about, isn't it? That a devotee means someone who's devoted their life to Krishna. It makes me feel so small when you realize that actually there are people that have devoted their life to Krishna. You know, there are sometimes people like myself who can't devote themselves to Krishna, and therefore they feel that they have to work outside. And in that situation, you spend so many hours of the week and your life around people that are not Krishna conscious, and you have to involve yourself in so much nonsense. And sometimes that's because of weakness of character, but then I feel sometimes that actually those devotees who are devoted to Krishna by living in a temple and associating with devotees fully, they're so special and they're so great. Really, you know, this is not an underestimation at all. That in order that to shut yourself off from the very, very large circles outside of a very, very small institution, that impetus to do that, that itself shows the greatness of that devotee. That you can actually make a resolution in your heart to now live amongst devotees, to live for the mission, to live in the temple, to always be around devotees. No problem. You'll always have your own issues. That's not a problem at all. But it's nothing compared to the issues when you're living outside the temple, working with people outside the temple. There's no comparison. You know, one or two arguments a year, a month, even a week is completely fine. You know, when you're outside, it's not even the arguments. It's the vibrations you're around, the people that you're around. You know, you may feel that I'm going to make money, I'm going to have opulence so that I can set a good example, you know, push the movement on, attract other people, you know, in, you know, make the credibility of ISKCON. But because you're around people that are not like that, if and when you achieve those things, they just make you proud. You forget about the devotional aspect. You forget about the yukta vairagya. You forget about how to actually utilize that in Krishna consciousness. Instead, it becomes your way to demand authority. You know? It becomes your way to demand respect. Because while you're cultivating those things that can be used in Krishna amongst people that don't use it in Krishna. And if you feel, if I feel, that association will act not like a reflection, then I think there's a problem. There's a serious problem. Because ultimately, there are many, many births of conditioning, and there's the one life where you have a choice. Do you spend time with devotees of Krishna, or do you spend time outside of devotees of Krishna? And when you make that choice, it's a very, very clear fact about your position in life. There, and it, you know, it's not something that we can criticize people for, because some people that are on different levels, like myself, who unfortunately don't have the association of devotees regularly, but at least those people like myself, if we acknowledge and identify this point, then there's some hope for the future. That at one time, maybe there'll be the attachment where you can leave associating outside on a worldly manner, and you can actually do the sacrifices that the devotees here have done, by actually living amongst devotees in a temple for the mission. And therefore, I think it's the most greatest thing ever. I don't think there's anything that can compare that sacrifice that devotees make. And Mukunda, he would think like this. And therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he did not invite Mukunda to come forward, Srivas Thakur, he was a person who was so intimate with Mahaprabhu that he had the courage to speak up. He had the courage to speak up. And Srivas Thakur, he said to Mahaprabhu that, why haven't you invited Mukunda? Mukunda, he is always at the front doing kirtan. He is always leading the devotees and you yourself. So why haven't you invited Mukunda? What offense can Mukunda make? It is impossible for Mukunda to make an offense. And Srivas Thakur said that Mukunda is the life and soul of all of us devotees. And it is only by hearing Mukunda singing that we have become attached to you. So why are you rejecting him? In fact, Srivas Thakur used the word apaman. The word apaman can be translated in a few ways. It means disgrace. Apaman also means humiliation. Apaman, what else? Huh? Insult, yes. Very strong word. Luckily I didn't use it. Insult. So Srivas Thakur said, you know, punish him, chastise him, but don't reject him. And definitely don't insult him. Don't disgrace Mukunda. You know? And then Mahaprabhu, his mood changed. And Mahaprabhu said that, listen, don't ever speak to me like this. Shivas Thakur, right? He had the courage to speak to Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu just turned around and said, don't ever speak to me like this. Don't you ever dare to try to canvass Mukunda towards me. Don't ever speak on behalf of Mukunda to me. You mustn't do this ever again. Shivas Thakur was thinking, okay, what is so bad that Mukunda has done? And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said, Kshane Dante Trine, that sometimes Mukunda, he would have straw in his mouth. And at other times, he would hit me with a stick. Two opposites. And this is that famous word. Kada Jatiya Beta. So Mahaprabhu used these words. He said that Mukunda, he is a straw and a stick man. Okay? Straw is soft and stick is hard. So he uses both. He uses the straw to display humility and he uses the stick to beat me. Now Shivas Thakur was thinking, I've never seen Mukunda with a stick. Everyone's thinking, what stick? He has no sticks. He certainly has no maces. He has straw in his mouth. That's a sign of humility. There's no stick. But they didn't say that because Mahaprabhu had already made up his mind. He had made up his mind, so there's no point arguing with him. And then, in this context, Bhaktisiddhanta, he comments on this point. He says, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he says in purport to this, he says that Mukunda, he had one hand on the feet of Mahaprabhu and the other hand on the neck of Mahaprabhu.
Right.
Okay. So this was what Mahaprabhu was trying to say. Now, nobody saw that. Okay. Do you find this in Chaitanya Charitamrita? You don't find this, right? You don't find Mukunda, you know, like this, you know, very awkward situation to do, you know? And Mukunda, as we've described, that's not actually his personality. But Mahaprabhu was saying this. So why is he saying this? So Shivas Thakur said, you know what? I give up. Shivas Thakur, he's described as the Maha Bhakta Srinivas. He's the speaker, the great speaker of the assembly. And Shivas Thakur said, you know what? I don't understand anything. You know, this person is just not like the way you're describing. But Mahaprabhu was saying it. So then when a Vaishnava has made up his mind, someone like Mahaprabhu, then what's the point in trying to think? You just give up. So therefore, Shivas Thakur had no, he just didn't couldn't understand how this is possible. Therefore, I can't explain myself if Shivas Thakur is unable to understand live, there and there, at that Leela. And me, you know, 500 years away, you know, more than that, in such a fallen situation. But I'm just going to share a few points and then you can all make your own, you can all contemplate yourself. So then, Shivas Thakur, he stepped out of the argument and he said, you know what, I'm not going to go down this route. I'm not going to get involved because this is just very difficult. He doesn't do this and he's saying he does this. Forget it. I'm not going to get involved. And then, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said this very, very beautiful line. He said, Vashishta Pariyabhe Advaitera Sanghe Bhakti Yoge Nacha Gaya Trinakari Dante. Mahaprabhu said that this Mukunda, he studies the yoga Vashishta in Advaita Sangha. Advaita was standing close by. Don't get me involved, you know. I just had mercy from you, you know. So he said this, Advaitera Sanghe, that he studies Yoga Vashishta with Advaita, and with devotees, he dances and sings with grass between his teeth. And because he doesn't glorify bhakti, because he doesn't push bhakti, when he's listening to Advaita recite Yoga Vashishta, therefore he is offending Bhakti Devi. And because Mukunda has captured me in my heart, and because he is taking me to the places where bhakti is not prominently being glorified, and if he had not gone, there would be no one to speak non-bhakti to. Therefore, Mukunda has offended Bhakti Devi, and therefore, na paib hai darshan. He cannot have my darshan. So this is what Mahaprabhu said. Now, Mukunda, he didn't go to these classes to learn about non-bhakti and to try to understand how bhakti is fallen and, you know, all those other things. He, Advaita Charya was there. So he would just listen. He would just sit there listening, just to get a point of view. So we have interfaith sometimes. Yeah? Hear the other person's side. But Mahaprabhu was here showing that in those situations, okay, it's okay to hear, but we should also speak. We should also preach. That if we are in a situation where we have to tolerate people speaking about non-bhakti, fine. But there has to be a time where you can have the platform and you can then defeat that. And you can establish the cult of Krishna consciousness. So Mahaprabhu was pushing this point. That, number one, don't do this. Don't associate with non-devotees. This is the first point he's establishing. Now, I don't know the context of nowadays, okay? Because Srila Prabhupada's, given us a preaching mission, so therefore, that's completely fine. But I'm just trying to explain the particular point in this Leela. Because Mahaprabhu was setting a very high standard, and if he sets a high standard, then we can work around that for the sake of the mission. That's not a problem. And that's guided by the senior devotees in our temple, our movement, and others. But Mahaprabhu was setting a high standard here. And that standard can be reinterpreted and understood by the senior devotees, not by myself. But what I will do is I'm just going to try to share for the spirit of the Leela the point. And Mahaprabhu, therefore, he's making this point that he didn't speak up. He didn't defend bhakti. Therefore, he's hitting me with a mace. So this is the point that's being made. And therefore, na paib darshan. Now, very quickly, okay, just literally in two or three sentences, Yoga Vashishta, we've heard before, Yoga Vashishta. So Yoga Vashishta is a very interesting text. Okay, this is a text which is predominantly the realizations of Vashishta to Lord Ramchandra. Lord Ramchandra once, while before marriage to Sita, Lord Ramchandra once, after traveling around Bharat, India, Ayodhya, he came back and he was remorse. And he was thinking, this world is just a little bit of a strange place. At that point, Dasharatha asked Vashishta. Ramachandra is contemplating about high truths. So he said to Vashishta, what should we do? Vashishta said, this is the right time to enlighten Lord Ram. He's now a good medium to understand about philosophy. So in the court of Dasharatha, for 21 days, Vashishta preached to Lord Ram. And Valmiki Rishi, he then documented the conversation that took place in 21 days in 32,000 verses. And these 32,000 verses became the Yoga Vashishta. Now what's interesting here is that we have Vashishta giving a sermon to Lord Ram. Now Vashishta, he went through his own development of Krishna consciousness by associating with Lord Ram. But at the time when Vashishta was preaching to Lord Ram, he was predominantly a Brahmavadi. Therefore, in the Yoga Vashishta, you have the realizations. I won't use the word an immature Vashishta, but I will use the word at least pre-developing his Krishna consciousness through his association with Lord Ram. Now, I'm just going to use one example to describe on how in the Yoga Vashishta, despite there predominantly being Brahmavad philosophy, there is a linkage to Krishna. And the only reason why I'm going to say this is so that because I know, for example, in London, at least in the east and in the west of London, there are temples, Hindu temples, that are based on Yoga Vashishta. So if you ever come, and I'm sure you know which temples they are, they're very common temples that we visit sometimes. And if you know some of these points, and I'm sure you already know, but they can help you in your preaching. So Yoga Vashishta, there was a particular time where Vashishta Rishi, he tells Lord Ram, that you know when you get married and you get coronated as a king, there's a person that I think you should follow. Now, just for 2 seconds, think who that person could be. Just for 2 seconds, think which person is Vashishta Muni going to describe to Lord Ram as an example of ideal king. Okay, 2 seconds. One, two. Did anyone guess Arjun? Put your hand up. Anyone guess Arjun? No, huh? Can you believe this is what happened? Vashishta, he said that in the previous Dwapara Yugas, there was a king called Arjun. And he was associated with the incarnation of Lord Hari. And there was a time where Arjun and Krishna came to a battlefield. And at that battlefield, Arjun was not willing to fight. And Krishna, now the words Bhagavad Gita are not used, okay? Because this is what Vyasadev, the name that Vyasadev gave to the text. So then Vashishta says that Krishna, he spoke philosophy to Arjun. And through that philosophy, Arjun became re-established in his Kshatriya Dharma. I will now, Vashishta, summarize those words of Krishna to Arjun. Can you believe this happened? Now, I don't remember the number, okay, so forgive me. But there must have been about, I think about 60 verses. 60 verses are paraphrased from the Bhagavad Gita as it is by Vashishta in his own words. And 5 verses out of the 60 odd verses are directly Bhagavad Gita verses. Like, Na jayate mriyate vakadachi nayam. Bhutva bhavita vana bhuyaha. Ajo nitya shashvato yam puran hanyamane shirire. This verse he quotes, Vashishta. So I'm just trying to explain that, can you understand that Vashishta is actually quite an elevated soul? For his mind to enter into previous Dwapar Yugas and to bring out 5 verses from the Bhagavad Gita in attempt to use Arjuna as an example to Lord Ramchandra, how great a person he is. Isn't it? And there's a verse in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita that he also quotes. So in this way, Vashishta, he paraphrases Bhagavad Gita to Lord Ram. And then Lord Ram actually says, you know, I'm going to try to follow Arjun. He actually says that to Vashishta. Arjun's actually a very good example. And he actually says, I don't know who Hari is. I'm not too sure who this incarnation of Hari is. Okay, but this Arjun, I'm going to try to follow him. So Arjun became an example in the life of Lord Ramchandra, according to Vashishta. But, and this is the important point, the Inyoga Vashishta, everything else is all about Vashishta's Brahmavad realizations. And therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not happy about this. He wasn't happy about this. And then, at that point, after Mahaprabhu said this, then that is when Mukunda, having heard this directly from Mahaprabhu, Mukunda then, he contemplated on one particular line that Mahaprabhu used, Na Paibe Darshan. So Mukunda was thinking, look, as a Jiva Atma, I have millions of births. The problem actually isn't about taking births. That's not a problem. Because you know what? When I take births, I'm going to, you know, I've got an elevated position right now. I'll probably get born into a Brahmin family. I'll probably become a devotee of Krishna. I'll probably become a devotee of one of the avatars. I'll probably, you know, have a good diet. I'll probably worship God, read scriptures. But you know what? That's not the problem. The problem is, Na paibe darshan, that I won't get to become a devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's Mukunda's problem. Births and births is not a problem. The problem is, Mahaprabhu said, I will not see him. And I am attached to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, not anybody else. So that is actually my issue. And Mukunda said, you know, because this body that I have, because through this body, I have upset Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Mukunda, then he said, Aparadi sharire chadibe aji ami. On this very day, I am going to commit suicide by giving up the body by which Mahaprabhu was upset. Mukunda, he had made this resolution, and no one knew about this apart from Gaura Sundar. No one knew that Mukunda had now decided to commit suicide because his body had upset Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So at that point, you know, it's like, this is going to be a really crude example, okay? But I'm going to give it anyway. You tell me off after. Okay, we've got older brothers and devotees like Prabhu Prabhu here. You tell me off after, okay, Prabhuji? But, you know, sometimes when you are on the, what do you call it, when you're about to be hung or exterminated? Yes? You know, they say that there's a bit of compassion and they say, is there any last wish? Do you have a last, you heard about this, right? Do you have a last wish? And then there was a lady in America who, had an injection, lethal injection. And she said, you can have some pizza, a bit of Coca-Cola, you know, my last meal, so I could become satisfied before, you know, I am killed. So Shiva Sakur said, you know what, Can I make a one last wish? I have just one last wish before I leave to commit suicide. And the wish was, he said to Shrivas Thakur, can you please ask Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when will I get to see him next? That was my only last wish. There's no other wish at all. Mukunda didn't say, you're wrong. He didn't say that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is misled. He didn't even argue. He accepted what Mahaprabhu said. Now think about this. All the devotees in this house had been blessed with mercy by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in positive ways. And there's this one person on the other side who has also received mercy from Mahaprabhu, but in a negative way. But do you know what? There was no difference. That one individual and those hundreds of thousands of people, they received mercy, but completely differently. But do you know what? Mukunda did not feel different from them. He felt Mahaprabhu was also given mercy. Such an interesting point is as well, isn't it, to think about. Mukunda, you know, his faith was not moved. He didn't think, why is this devotee getting more favor than me? You know, what's happened here? He didn't even think like that. He was just interested, when am I going to see him? So Shrivas Thakur asked Mahaprabhu, that look, Mukunda has one last request. When will he see you? And that is when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said, after 10 million births, which is 1 koti, darshana paibe nishchaya. Now, Mukunda, he was crying so much. It is described that his eyes had swollen, he had incessant tears, and his heart was going through intense pain. Intense pain. And in that pain, Mukunda received his answer. And Mukunda only heard one word. Nishchaya, nishchaya, nishchaya. And this word nishchaya means it's going to happen. Definitely, certainly, without doubt, after 10 million births, I will see Lord Chaitanya. At that point, we all know, and we've heard this many, many times, Mukunda started to say the word, paibe, 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 that I'm going to receive, I'm going to receive, I'm going to receive. And he started to dance and sing and roll on the ground. He was ecstatic. Now, he didn't do this in front of the devotees. He was outside the house. He wasn't, you know, catching attention. He did it in his own heart, outside. And then when Mahaprabhu saw this, Mahaprabhu just started laughing. He was smiling. It's described that Mahaprabhu had the most beautiful smile on his face. And he just laughed and laughed and laughed. And the devotees were again completely confused and bewildered. What's going on, you know? You chastise him, you justify your chastisement, and then you tell him, you give him such a harsh punishment, and then you're laughing. You know, so this is a very difficult thing for anyone to understand, especially myself, about how the mind of God works. It's just not possible. What to speak of judging Krishna or judging Mahaprabhu. It's just not possible. Apart from, you know, the acharyas and Sri Prabhupada, they can reveal some points. And that is when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you know what, just bring him inside. And then the devotees, all the devotees, Mukunda, 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 they would say, come, come, come. And he couldn't listen. He didn't hear. He was in so much ecstasy that Mukunda had no idea that he was being asked to come. And that is when Mahaprabhu said, you know what, just bring him here somehow. The devotees lifted Mukunda and carried him. You know, like when you give the birthday bumps? They lifted him. They lifted him all the way to Mahaprabhu. And Mukunda still didn't see Mahaprabhu because he was in so much ecstasy that I'm going to paibe, 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 see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu out of 10 million births. That's amazing. So then Mukunda, he must have felt the presence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he just was on the floor. He looked up, and when he looked up and he saw the face of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he collapsed. He collapsed. And when he collapsed, that's when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to him, you know, stand up, stand up, stand up. And Mukunda, he was then helped to be stood up, to stand up. And that's when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that's when he said that, Mukunda, Amara Haila Paraje, you who I would always defeat, Paraje, you've defeated me. Because your faith did not move. Despite me punishing you, you had unflinching faith. You did not judge me. Your bhakti remained intact, and your only attachment was to seeing me. Therefore, Mahaprabhu said that you have defeated me. So can you see the example that Mahaprabhu set using Mukunda and how Mukunda was defeated Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? And that's when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he used some very sweet words. He said that not even half a sesame seed's worth of offense have you caused. He said to Mukunda, you have made no offense. You know why? Because you are my dear associate. You cannot make an offense. He said, I just wanted to highlight your great devotion to the entire world for all time, your qualities of patience, perseverance, and devotion. I wanted to highlight, and I wanted to relish your bhakti for me. Therefore, I, Parihas, I did this entire thing as a joke. This is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu put Mukunda through. And as you can see, Mukunda, he got through. And Mukunda was then given a benediction. He said, whenever I appear, you will always be my singer. Whenever I appear. That was the blessing that he gave. And then finally, Vrindavan Das Thakur, he said that Mahaprabhu, he will place pure devotion in the throats and the words of Mukunda, and anyone who hears the story of Mukunda, who has been benedicted to appear every life with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, anyone who hears this story will also join Mukunda. That is the benediction given by Vrindavan Das Thakur to all the devotees. Whew! Such a difficult topic. Such a difficult topic that I've just tried somehow to irrationally and in an incorrect way present. Thank you very much for tolerating my limitations in presenting such a deep topic. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna. Questions and comments, please. Correct me.